Hey, thank you for being here today. It is me, Dave Wakeman. This is the Business of Fun. I appreciate you spending your time with me right now. Today, we will hear from Aleister Crowley. He is the CEO of Fanbase, and we had a really great conversation. Al is a wonderful man, very nice, and I think that comes across in this conversation. I also want to take a second to thank you for the notes and emails about the more regular podcast schedule. People, you have said that it is very nice to hear from me, and I want to tell you that I feel the same way about you. It is nice to get your notes and your emails and your messages saying that it's nice to hear me from me. We got to do this more often, I think, is the way we got to do it. But it brings up an important point, which is that I want to get your voice into the podcast a little bit more as I'm doing these more regularly again. And what I want from you is for you to send me a note. It's my email address. You can jump in the Slack channel for the talking tickets. You can DM me on social media, however it's easiest for you to get to me. But tell me what you want to hear. Who do you want to hear from? What topics do we need to explore? Where are your struggles and challenges? Just send me a note, davidwakeman.com. DM me on the social medias. You can send me a letter. You can send me some smoke signals, whatever it is. I want to get your voice in here as much as possible. I want to do more stuff like I did recently with Dr. B. Joy John, where I really peppered you across social media and in all the places and asked you what you needed to know about sleep. And I think it added a little flavor to the podcast. And I want to do more of that because I think it's fun and it allows me and you to be sitting in these conversations with people I'm talking to. So send me those notes, davidwakeman.com. You're listening to this thing. And if you don't know it already, and I don't know how you would not know, but sign up for the Talking Tickets newsletter. It is at talkingtickets.substack.com. It is my newsletter that is erratically scheduled whenever I find something that I need to share or want to share with you. And my love letter to the business of tickets. Talkingtickets.substack.com. I talk about all kinds of stuff. We really have been digging down on the things that I look for when I'm working with people, and some of the things around really around branding, market research, how to grow an audience, because I keep hearing this common theme come up when I get messages from you or when I hear from you. It's that you're struggling to know who your customers are. You're struggling to find new customers. You're struggling with that most intimate part of the business, which is the relationship between you and the audience. So we're going to talk about that a lot more lately, but tell me what you want to hear from me, what you need me to find for you. Okay. So do that. You can also visit my website. That's davewakeman.com. That's where you'll find everything. You can also sign up for the newsletters there. That box pops up, lets you know that like, hey, I should sign up for the Dave's newsletters. So you can do that. As an example of upcoming things, I have Arena Metrics coming on in about a week or so. And we're going to talk about a really cool thing, which is like, how do you take ideas across borders? And then we're going to talk about culture. And culture, not so much as cultural institutes, but culture is something that we live in, that we reside in, and what that means for the people around us. So if you have it, if that sparks any ideas or anything you would like to hear from, send me a note again and let me know what we should talk about. A few announcements before we get to Al. I am going to be on the road. That's right. You're getting the full on, fully engaged, all tickets all the time, Dave. Maybe not all tickets all the time, but you know, a lot more activity. It's just the nature of everything coming together and allowing me a little more freedom to travel right now. The thing I'm most important to all of you is that I have scheduled, and they aren't on my website yet, but they will be in the next couple of days, 2 in-person Fan for Life workshops. The first one will be in New York City on September 4th, 2024. That is a Wednesday. It will go from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. 9 to 4, and then we will do a happy hour afterwards. It's going to be a full day of how you can create and win fans. It doesn't matter if it's the theater, the opera, sports, whatever. I want you to understand how to grow a relationship with your fans that transcends time. Called Fans for Life. We did it in Melbourne in 2019. It was awesome. I still get messages from people who were there telling me how great it was. We're going to do that again. New and improved for 2024 in New York City, my favorite city. September 4th, 2024. You're not going to want to miss this. It's even better stuff. I mean, I've had 5 years of being a complete and total student of branding and strategy and what people want now to be able to give you an even better experience. So we will talk about how to do market research when you don't have a budget. We will talk about what you need to know about your brand. We will talk about pricing. We will get through so much in one day that you won't want to miss it. It will be the most valuable, was that 8 hours? 7 hours. Forget it, 7 hours that you can spend all year on teaching yourself how to sell more tickets, win more fans, win more customers, and create more stability in your organization. So with that, I'm also looking to go back to Melbourne, Australia. And that will be Tuesday, and because I'm doing it for the Australians, 19th of November, 2024. That's Tuesday, 19th of November, 2024. Again, 9 a.m., 4 p.m. 4 p.m., we're going to cut out. We're going to do happy hour. We're going to have a lot of fun like we did the last time. The home of sport. More venues for sports, theater, entertainment than any place I've ever been. I think it, probably the most in the world. It's an amazing city. If you've never been to Melbourne or Australia, my workshop is a wonderful reason to go. If you have never been to Melbourne, or if you have, or you're in Australia and you're looking for an excuse to get to Melbourne, of course, this is a great reason to go. And you'll obviously, just because you are always in on the joke, you'll notice that both of these coincide with Pearl Jam concerts. I don't want you to think that there's anything crazy going on. Third announcement, I will be in London for my annual residency. If you've been around here and you've listened to me at all over the years, you know I usually pick up steaks when my son's away at camp during the summer. And my wife and I usually go to Miami. This year, we're going international. So from the 28th of June till the 8th of July, that's where it's scheduled for right now, we're going to be in London, or we're going to be based out of London. It's still possible that I go to Amsterdam for a day or two and Paris for a day or two on either side of that. But the schedule right now is I'll be based in London for those 10 or so days. Here's what I'm doing. I'm going to go see Pearl Jam at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium because that seemed like the most Dave thing in the world to do. And I could not be let you down by it being any less of a cliche than it would take for me to go. My wife wants to go see Wimbledon, so I'm going to work on getting us some tickets to go see Wimbledon. You wander around. She's wanted to go her whole life. So obviously I'm going to get her, find a way to get her into that. Then the National, the National plays in London on the 5th of July. So, and it's outdoor concert in the park near Ted Lasso over by Crystal Palace Park, I believe the venue's called. We're going to do that. But what I do want to do is I want to have a time to have some pints with people. And I'm going to go ahead and tentatively mark that for Tuesday, the 2nd of July. Chance for everybody to get together, grab some beers, grab a drink, glass of wine, whatever it is, and just chat and hang out. And see each other in person, because that's one of the most wonderful things about traveling and doing some of the stuff that I do is that everywhere I go, I have friends. So that's great. And that'll be Tuesday, the 2nd of July, tentatively scheduled. I will try to lock that in. And you know me, more likely than not, we will go to BrewDog. So that was a lot of announcements. That was a lot of Dave today. I hope you don't mind that I was so long-winded, but you know, it happens. All right, but now let's get to Al Crowley. Aleister Crowley is the CEO of Fanbase, and they work in the U.S. with some really exciting clients, and they're also in Europe. I wanted to have Al on because I just like what he's working on. I like the way he approaches a fan base, the simplicity of what fan bases do. And I know that that was like sort of a pun on fan base. Forgive me. But we talk about sports business and how sports is going through a transition and a challenging period. What Al calls the distraction of Web3, the need to understand and do the basics well, to make the tech stacks and bring out stable tech stacks. We talked about one of the interesting things that I found was we talked about data and research, and Alistair gave a really great answer to me that made me back off of my research is backwards looking, or research is proactive and data is reactive stance, if only for just in the moment. I don't necessarily trust that everybody's going to do it the way that Alistair explains it to us, but I like the answer. We talk about complexity and why there's too much complexity. We talk about US and UK differences. We talk about tickets and subscriptions and luxury and premium. We talk about a little bit about branding, and we talk about the changes and challenges in the business. We talk about stories and how the stories connect to brand to build better connections. I mean, this is like a really good conversation, and it's a lot of stuff that I find myself going back to over and over again. I think you're going to dig it. So here's my conversation with Alistair Crowley, the CEO of Fanbase, on The Business of Fun.
Okay, I want to welcome Al Crowley to The Business of Fun podcast. What's up, man?
Hey, how are you doing? Good to see you again, Dave.
It's great to see you. I look forward to our chat. and partly it's because people can't see either one of us. Because this is only audio, but like, trust me when I say that we're both there, like sitting here grinning and like got big, like happy faces. So it's like, it's always great. So it's good. But I wanted to have you on to talk about Fanbase today. And, it's interesting because, you know, we've had a chance to get to know each other over the last couple months. One of the things, ideas that you seem to bring up with me pretty consistently is that the business of sports and sports teams is kind of going through a transition phase. And that shows up differently in different markets because you guys operate in the UK and in the US. What do you mean by that? Like, and I get it, and I'm sure everybody is feeling it in their own way. But yeah. Describe it for us. What do you feel like this is going through this challenging and changing environment? And how does that show up for you? Define that for me.
So I guess like what I see that's changing very, very quickly is of course technology. So technology has never moved as quickly as it is now. If you think about 10 years ago, what was going on, it was like kind of cloud computing was kind of kicking off. And 10 years before that, we had the iPhone. And it was like these massive leaps. And now we've got AI. And it's like, things just seem to be moving ever more quickly, just through the advances of tech. And I think what I'm seeing in sports, based on my previous career in management consulting and doing this for banks and energy companies and et cetera, sports seems to be running at a million miles an hour, trying to stay right at the forefront of things, jumping into the deep end on projects, when at the end, we're losing track of doing the basics well. So at the sacrifice of all the basics, we're jumping in and trying to smash an NFT project, the rest of the world isn't quite ready yet. We're not ready yet. So, and I just see that happening all the time. And it's across the UK, US, Europe, everywhere we look at. Mm-hmm. And that for me, we've got to try and see how we can, from our perspective, as a consultative tech company as well, just calm things down a little bit, make sure that we're servicing our fans well, consistently, reliably, without jumping the gun into these flashy things.
I agree. I told you that before. But I think to me, right, one of the things I do is go often teach and then speak at school with students about brand management.
Yeah.
And the thing I see where it shows up for me, because it lends itself directly to what you're talking about, is in the neglect of the brands. So often, like, your brand is your most valuable asset. You know, it's if these are private companies, or like, and so, well, they are, I guess, private companies, but if they were publicly traded companies, about 40% of the value might be in just the brand. Yeah. And when you talk about the basics here, I see it starting there with like sort of just a lack of like understanding of, well, who is our customer and why are they going to give us their time and their attention compared to the alternatives.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I like about what you guys are doing is like, you kind of have help, because you use the word consultative tech company, help people take that step back, right? And get, you know, get to the start, right? Which is what the success look like. Can you talk me through that process a little bit? Like, how do you like approach helping people understand like, hey, look, let's not try to go a million miles an hour because we're missing 3.5 tires. We got a half a tire here.
Yeah. Or trying to like fasten some sort of rocket to the back of the car.
When I had no tires on it, it's just skid on the undercarriage. Yeah,
exactly. Right along the floor. So yeah, I think anytime we speak to a sports organization, the first things always, like, there's things that we are not positioned to do, and there's some amazing people talking about it. The brand perspective is yourself. Two nights ago, actually, I was with I was at a basketball game in London with a good friend now, Grant Russell, who's doing amazing things at West Ham, and he was previously at a team in Scotland called Motherwell. And that was all on the just pulling things right, stripping the brand right back to its core. It's like, what's our identity? What does it mean to be this sports organization? And being very smart and specific about telling 2 or 3 or 4 stories off the back of that, and just repeating. Yep. And it's this like compounding impact. I talked about this on a LinkedIn post. It's just keep reinforcing those really core messages. So that's not necessarily where I specialize in or our company specialize in, but the way we come from, the way we're coming from, as from a technology kind of transactional layer, talking about ticketing, VIP bookings or hospitality bookings and management and subscriptions and making that as simple and as easy as possible. It's really going back to like, right, what's our core offering? Let's make those core offerings ridiculously easy to buy, really incentivize our fan base to give those a go, and just really build around the core. So just build up momentum, serve it really, really well. Don't drop the ball on the fans, and starting to build some momentum around the core products that we offer that's driving the most revenue. And once we get that going really, really well, and we're building up a great source of data and insight and information, that's where we can then go, right, the data's there. That's giving us a layer of really interesting insights. So now we have these good insights. How are we going to practically use them? But again, just keeping it, let's just focus on 3 first. Let's not try and boil the ocean. And I think that's, these things can all start to get overwhelming and rushed and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, like that's really where we try and just hone in on some really important things.
Now, I'm interested in asking about this thing where you're like, well, let's just do 3 things, right? And let's get those 3 things right. And I'm asking it because one of the challenges I have, I say like 1 to 3 things is all you should really be focusing on as far as like any like huge ideas or things you're strategic projects. Like, you know, if you got 3 and they're not paying off, let's not add, let's subtract. Let's say, let's say 1 or 2 then. How do you explain it to people? Because everybody has this, it's like, it's embedded in their culture. It's kind of like, it's toxic at this point where it's like, I just got to do more, 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 more. How do you get people to like understand the value in pulling back and the value in focus and concentration? Because I mean, I'm better at it now, but I mean, it's still hard because, you know, I'm fighting what society is trying to push.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely swimming upstream when I'm doing this.
So to be perfectly honest with you, it's something that I've personally struggled with is I get very excited by things as well. And I get excited by opportunities and conversations I'll find myself kind of, you know, having lots of things going on, but I will always pull myself back into it's much better to do one thing really, really well than five things terrible. Or five things averagely well. Mm-hmm. So I think there's different levels to it. Like as a company, the way that we behave and the way we act is like we are solving the problem for sports. And within sports, we're looking at this section of the market. And we're gonna completely focus in on that. And within that, we might do some interesting things and it might kind of expand out a little bit, but at that level, we're doing one thing. And I think just reinforcing that really helps. The thing where I learned the just three things from was actually a project I was on prior to starting Fanbase at an energy company in the UK called OVO. And the founder of that, Steve Fitzpatrick, had the co-founders there had put in place this system where it was just three things. So as a company, we do three things. There are three objectives. So you'll be responsible for one or a couple of those. And then you personally then have just three objectives. And then it just kind of layers through. So it layers through the organization. So the senior management have three, then they can disseminate that to their team and then they have three. And it's a very nice way to just keep things simple and focused. So I think when your role literally has three things that you've got to do and they're very tangible and clear and timely and all that kind of stuff, that's enough like to get your head around. I think in sports, certainly what I've seen is it's so you end lots of roles end up doing lots of different jobs. Like for me, is it within college sports, within the UK, with outside of the Premier League, you end up having multiple, like 7, 8, 9, 10 different things that you're trying to do. Oh, can you just help that? Yeah, because we're just trying to get this done for the sports organization, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of the onus, I think, really lands on the strength of the executive level to enforce this. Like, I'm going to be doing one or two things, then you are going to be doing one or two things, and the latter three.
Yeah, I agree. There is a lack of... And again, I have a friend who's in the Navy, and he's like, I don't know his rank in the Navy, but he's like crazy, like the things he does. And he deals with like, talk about tough job. He works on Middle East policy and like the relations, like, so he's got an easy job.
Yeah.
But we were talking about it because we were talking about just like a lack of strategy and a lack of the critical thinking skills around strategy. And it's not just at the executive level in sports. It's just everywhere. There is a just extreme lack of strategic thinking and the skills don't exist. Right. And I learned them. I spent my whole career developing those things. I know that they're it's possible. It's just it's frustrating because it's just everybody's like so they're trapped, I feel, is probably the way of putting it, in this cycle, the never-ending cycle of more and more and more, that they can't even catch their breath long enough to step back and do this, even though focusing like your friend at West Ham.
Yeah,
he's absolutely right. Like you know, this is what I teach in my brand class. It's like, go and listen. You get three questions. Who is the target? What's our position? How are we going to show up in the market? Right. And it's those four or five things. Right. And you can see that West Ham has done a great job with their brand because they unique, distinctive colors. the Hammer logo, right? Like, you know, they're hammers, but, you know, like, you know, they've done that. And, you know, so that challenge is like, it really, when you're talking about it, it really speaks to me, because it's like, I hope that by belaboring it a little bit, people will step back and go, let me give myself just a little room to breathe, because it's super important. But not to go off on a tangent or anything, when you're talking about there's like 10, 12, 15 things to do, that shows up even in the way like a lot of the technology solutions are laid out, right? There's just like, to me, there just seems to be like so much needless complexity in all the systems. Is that consistent with like some of the conversations you guys are having, or, you know, is it, or is that like, do I have a mistaken impression?
So, yeah, I think it's definitely
like, Dave, you don't have a mistaken impression. You're on top of these things.
Yeah, we've definitely seen that in the UK market, and more recently in the US market too. And I think there's two things going on here, and I'm sure it's the case in the US as well. Is one, the tech stack traditionally had been point solutions to do point jobs, and that was fine. But those point solutions have been built before kind of a lot changed in technology. So I won't go into the detail of it, but in the last couple of years, it's been a lot easier to build tech that can integrate and create a great ecosystem where all these systems are talking to one another, the reporting and dashboards and like insights and information that leadership needs or operators need is all in one place. So back then, we've ended up, and I think through some inertia and just some nervousness, is we then have these point solutions that aren't really talking to one another, not really from a fan standpoint, doesn't feel like my club recognize me, like I'm not really, like it's hard to buy from my sports organization, but it's ridiculously easy to buy from my coffee shop, and I have like an app on my phone and they say hi to me every morning. So there's such a disparity between these two things. And I think it's like there's knowledge and expertise, like all the teams I talk to, like, oh, is there anybody here that focuses on technology? And like, no, there's a commercial team, you know, there's a marketing media team, and there's a ticketing team, and they are all responsible for their own tech. And like, you take that through into a similar sized organization with a similar revenue, it's like you would absolutely at least have a very solid outsource partner, if not a kind of head of IT that's knowledgeable, or even a CTO that's on it. So it's in an interesting place, I think. And I was surprised to see that at some really high levels within US sports, the assumption is it's totally, you know, sorted and there's no issues and there's no work to be done really, from a UK standpoint, when in actual fact there's a lot of opportunities to be efficient and simplify things and get things working.
Well, let me ask this, and I'm gonna ask it like I don't know the answer, because I want to make it clear to people what's happening here. So when you're talking about the point solutions for point jobs and how each team would have, like, you know, their ticket team would have their technology need system, the marketing team would have a whole different tech stack, and the operations would all, you know, everybody would be a thing. It is, if I'm not mistaken, it would be similar to when they would quarter people in like the you know, the dark ages, and they would, like, you know, you'd be pulling it all in a different direction. And what happens is like the customer falls right through the middle of the hole. The fan falls right through the middle of the hole. And so they never, and like you said, it's harder to buy, right? Because we've been spoiled by first the one click button on Amazon, and then now that places are, if you have an Apple device, it's like that you can play Apple Pay with everything, so you don't have to fill in everything, and it's like boom, done. It also makes it have, because here's one of the things that I look for in the data is the data around the fan life cycle and how the ebbs and flows depending on life stages. So then the thing is like with the, and again, if I'm wrong in my description here, you let me know. What happens is like maybe now because I'm like, in my late 40s, my son's a teenager, he's playing a lot of sports. I don't get to go to as many games as I would did in my 30s and 20s. I'm no less of a fan. I just don't go. But I might be completely neglected and ignored or like just out of mind in the life cycle thing because I'm not immediately going to buy an 8-game pack or something. And so because of the way this technology is, I just fall through the cracks. Because like you don't notice that I like have a, I'm not coming eight, I'm still coming twice a year as
That's
opposed to
it.
like 8 ways before. Am I getting
Yeah.
at it sort of right? It's just like
Absolutely.
it doesn't let you give people the service they deserve.
Exactly. But if you have hundreds of thousands of dollars to integrate it all through huge projects, then yeah, you can get it working. But that's not something a lot of, outside of the top echelons of sport, that's not free, free cash to burn on doing that work. So, yeah, I think there's a to be honest, I think between that just kind of pulling things back and operationally managing things and just focusing on your core offerings, your core identity, telling those stories, delivering that one click kind of experience. And really looking and going, this should be and feel easier is the right question to be asking. Because things have moved on a heck of a lot since a lot of these tech stacks were put in place. So it's an exciting moment at the same time. Like, yeah, there's problems there, but that's the cool thing is it's across the board, from the media side through to the stuff that we're focusing on, through to all the kind of like merchandise or point of sale things at stadiums. There's such cool stuff happening. And it's the role of the tech companies, plural, to make sure that this new generation of tech is plug and play. It's click, 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 and the thing's connected. So, yeah.
Well, because again, I'm going to use a term, and maybe using it poorly, and if so, you help me out here. But it seems like two things you're trying or you're encouraging people to manage for, and you're trying to, and I think I do it a little bit the same thing. It's like think about the things, not the sugar high of now, but think about the long tail of a lifetime relationship with your sports fan. And then there's so much friction, though, that the tech, instead of being an aid to helping you create this long tail, is instead an impediment to your success. Or am I wrong?
If you could just quit your jobs and because just speak for what we're trying to do full time, that would be perfect. But that's exactly it. Don't focus on, yeah, sure, there's some short-term gains and some short-term goals, but there's a long-term objective here for any sports organization. And as I said, we talk about compounding impacts and the momentum you can build around brands and the infrastructure that you've got in place from a service and a tech point of view. That's got such, and you will feel so much better when you're working. You go to work and be like, we're nailing this. We're doing this, rather than going, oh my God, like it's crazy today. That's all I hear is like, oh, I was manic today.
Yes,
I
oh
was
my God.
crazy.
Everybody's always like scrambling. It's like I feel bad for people because they're like so stressed out. Now, how do I want to put this? This is okay. So when I think about this, right, in the context of our conversation, maybe I'll make a statement and then I'm going to expect you to make a question out of my statement. This is how I'll do this. Is the challenge I keep trying to teach people about is that you're not trying to roll over your customer base because or actually, let me step that back. Too much attention is trying to figure out how to make people be heavy users of sports. So they want everybody to be like, let's say, you know, I'm a Tottenham guy. So you know, go to the 25 home matches every year.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And maybe not Tottenham, because they understand the branding. They have a really strong brand, and they've done a good job. So they're doing it because they're building out a lot of like customers. And the power of this is like, because you have so much inventory, you have so many games and so many tickets to sell, is expanding the reach of your audience. So, you know, instead of 1,000 people, you know, the question is, how do you get to 2,000, right? Because it's hard to get somebody from going to 8 games a year to 10, but it's a lot easier to get somebody to go from 0 to 1. And then if you get a lot of people going once a year, over time, you're going to have more people who are going to those 4 or 5 games a year, right? Yeah. And it's just like this really like strong, powerful cycle that begins to work. And it's very hard. And I think, to me, that's what it sounds like you're trying to encourage people to think about as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is.
There was a question there.
But we saw it. So right back on a very small scale, but there's an amazing in Edinburgh in Scotland, which is where I'm from and where I live. There is an ice hockey team and they play in a small stadium. And they started out with us and they'd just come back after a few years not playing. And they had, you know, 200, 300, 400 fans coming down, which was amazing. It was really good. They were very happy. But that they just kept repeating a great experience over and over again. And it's been easy to buy and the data is now here and they're able to communicate. And it's just a rhythm that they've got into. Mm-hmm. And they're approaching, like we're talking about selling out towards the end of the season and then into like how are we going to manage this next season? And it's people coming, it's the 0 to 1s. And then that them going, oh, wow, that was good. You should go to that. And mm-hmm. click, click, and it's there. Data's there, opt in, and we've got it. Yeah. And they've literally done that on a much smaller scale to tournament. It's so good to see.
Yeah. I feel like a little bit of the challenge is that people feel that when they think about how they're developing their fan base and their ticket buyers and their fans and their future fans, is that it's like a binary choice. Like I'm either a fan and I'm all in, or I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who are just casual.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Because again, the data is clear as day. If people haven't picked up haven't read Soccernomics, just go get the book. It's all there. I mean, they did a great job with the data. And the fan's life cycle is up and down, ebbs and flows. Sometimes it's going to be really, really high. Other times it's going to be really, really low. The thing is like it's a basic law of marketing. It's like physical and mental availability. You want to be on people's mind when they come to say like, oh man, I want to do something this weekend. Oh, the hockey team's playing. I had a great time. I'm going to see if they're playing this weekend, if there's tickets, right? Then it's easy to buy. You've achieved mental and physical availability.
Yeah.
You know, and people just don't think of that unless I'm missing something.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's back to the more of the kind of the brand storytelling that our friend at West Ham's managed to do all through his career is tell those stories that connect you to your identity, and that's so powerful. And that becomes that moment when you connect with the brand, you remember the whole experience, and you go, yeah, okay, that was awesome. I'm gonna come back to that. But I think that moment, and I think that's the thing that really excites me and motivates us, is for us, there's like two massive moments where you're at your happiest. So one, if you close your eyes, one is when you're there with your family, or like you're with like the people you love the most. Mm-hmm. And the other one is when you're with tens of thousands of people and there's something that just was unforeseen just happened in the stadium. And you're in this euphoric crowd. And that's a gig, it's sports, whatever it is. And there's those are the two feelings that are just like insane, and we're trying to deliver that second one to as many people as possible, and that's the connection. So the storytelling, the identity, and creating those euphoric moments, and that will pass through those ebbs and flows through a life cycle for sure.
Yes. Oh, 100%. It's it's one of my great frustrations is the fact that there's been such neglect of a lot of teams' brands, because I mean, I've been fortunate over the years to work with all kinds of brands, credit card companies, wine, beer, alcohol, nightclubs, sports teams, colleges, consulting firms. I've worked with almost everybody. Sports teams have an advantage. Yeah. Everybody. The only other thing that comes close is your favorite band.
Yeah.
Or something similar to that. That people really do care.
Yeah.
About your brand. They really do. I spend a lot of time in class going, nobody gives a shit about your brand. Right.
Yeah.
Except for the sports team. And so to neglect it is just you should just never ever be allowed to be a marketer ever again. Because the thing is you have just inherently built into it the emotion that every other marketer and every other product in the world would kill for. Because emotion moves people. So you never neglect that, right? Because those moments are so powerful. It is which leads me into this conversation. You brought up data a couple times, and I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about this, because I have a conflicted relationship with data. And I think the way I describe it is data is reactionary. Yeah. Everything that happened in the past, right? So the assumption by relying so heavily on just the data, to me, is that everything that happened in the future is going to be exactly like it was in the past. And I don't feel like that's a very good bet. That's my way of approaching it. But what I do really encourage people to do is to use the data as a guide to help do research, right? Nice. To help you create hypothesis around, for things to ask about and discover and look for. Yeah. So it helps you make better decisions. From your vantage point, because the data is a big part of what you work on and what you are trying to help teams collect and use in an effective manner, is my approach outdated, or is it right or wrong, or is it somewhere in the middle?
Yeah.
Let me give you a little bit more. My real frustration is I want people to be just a little more proactive about talking to their fans and their customers and understanding them. Yeah. So that's kind of why I'm asking the question, and it doesn't happen enough. It's like they're afraid to hear what the fans are really going to say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a simple framework to do that, to go about, because if you just said, let's go and do some market research, or you guys should go and do market research, and you'll get 1,000 different people doing 1,000 different types of market research. One guy goes, I'm just going to ask some people some questions. And that's great. And then someone else will go, I'm going to create a 70-page questionnaire and send that out to all my fans. And, and you'll get everything in between. And I think a simple framework for doing this is so invaluable. But from our standpoint, the data can inform a lot of forward actions in terms of there's a lot of information and insight within there that if you use it well can really help drive further spend, further engagement. It's you building a relationship with your fan base really at the core of it. So I think it's extremely important and still a large gap with a lot of sports organizations that either aren't using it or don't know how to, don't have the skill sets internally. But when you couple that with forward-looking market research, I think that's such a powerful connecting device, because actually market research, if you do it well, forces you to have the conversation. I think data, yeah. You're looking at a data set and it's all numbers. And if you're not careful, it just becomes statistics and numbers.
Yeah.
And then
it's abstract.
It's abstract. Yeah. And back to the brand point, you're turning yourself back into a badge, not a feeling and a mm-hmm. true brand. So I think the two are interconnected. The market research brings a human element and the conversation, the mm-hmm. data brings the, there's some things going on here. We should act upon them. And so I think the two have to go side by side.
No, I think that's a pretty that's a better answer than I gave a question. And it's just because it gives context to the thing, right? And I realize in my role, I sort of have to make things sometimes black and white to get people to think about things differently. So that I thought that was really great, because it is. It's like I say that like a good marketer, or any marketer really, their job is to bring the voice of the customer into the organization.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's like if you're a good marketer in sports, you want to bring the voice of the fan into the organization. I think people get frustrated with me when I say this, but it's no different marketing a team than it is marketing a bottle of wine, a bar of soap, a nightclub. So it's cool to talk to somebody like you who has a sort of similar background, like different because you're a tech guy, but like, you've worked with banks and you've worked in consulting professional services. So you've seen the best practices from many different industries. And I spend a lot of time going like, there's these tools. Just use the tools, bro. Just use the tools.
Yeah, it's all there. It's all there. But I think that's it goes back to, again, it's just there's a pace in sports that almost doesn't allow for the step back, the using of frameworks and good tools, simple, good frameworks and tools to just apply to your role and then go through that, good processes, knowing what your objectives are, having good processes, working well with others, having the right data points, having the right technology, doing the right research, and that cycle should be self-fulfilling.
You have to, you're right, because the pace, especially in season, can be so brutal, especially if you're working with like a soccer team or, because their calendar is really like 10 months, right? Yeah. Like if you're working with, like college basketball, college football, something like that, it can be a little bit easier to do, except for the fact that like everybody's working on multiple sports. So then it's even more frantic.
Yeah.
But that's what lets the bad processes, intrude. And then these things like they stay and it becomes the, this frightening saying of, well, that's just the way we do things here.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh no, don't do that. I guess my final question before we plug, because we must plug heavily at the end, is, how do you talk to people about creating the environment for change? Because that's really what you're discussing here. Because what you're trying to convince people is that you can do it. Your life can be better and easier. Easier and better, and your customers, your fans, end up with a better experience because of the same thing.
I think for us, like, how do you kind of create the change? Like when we would always talk about it in these big change programs that we do with great people in banks and energy companies and all sorts of different industries, was there has to be a burning platform is what we would describe it as. Like there has to be something that's like, oh my god, this is so bad, we have to make a change. That's always the best way to start. What I think happens a bit in sport is there has been a burning platform and that becomes the norm in a lot of places, so it's almost like it goes unrecognized. So I guess one of the points is hey, there's something like intrinsically wrong here that could be so much better? That has to be the start. And then really working through what could the good thing look like? Like, how good could this be? Is the next step. And then we're building the bits in between. And everyone goes, yeah, I agree, it could be a lot better. Yeah, I agree, it could be a lot. It's a lot worse right now. It could be a lot better. And then we'd build the steps together in the middle. And there'll be a lot of that isn't technology focused. It's all the other parts we've talked about today.
That's right.
And it's like, we can help inform parts of those, but you can do this yourself. Like, you are good enough to be able to do that, which is another thing I think in sport, everyone just goes like, kind of dips themselves when actually these are amazing people. Like, how are they doing their jobs? these are. Build the bits together to get to that good point. And that's the golden moment where you go, right, you're then on a journey, and hopefully together we can become partners rather than like a transactional supplier or something, you know? I think that's a big
change. My approach to it is always like to be a cheerleader a bit for like how great things could be, because I know that like you said, I have to create this environment where the pain of change is less than like how great the future is going to be. And I guess it's like I'm pretty successful about it, and I don't know that I did it was doing it intentionally at the start, but people are like, when Dave comes in, it's like he brings this adrenaline to the thing, and he or he's like a cheer, he pumps us all up, he pumps everybody up, it's like so great. And that's sort of the thing. I mean, I don't have any power in the relationship, right? Like the same as you. I want to collaborate with you because I believe in you, and I believe in what the product you're offering and what you're doing. Yeah. Sometimes that requires a little tough love, but that's okay too. I tend to agree. It's like until things are on fire, and like, but then it also reminds me because you have to juggle so many balls while you're doing these jobs, and like everything's going crazy, that you have to be excellent, like just do it, like just to keep up with the job, even though you're not reaching your full potential as a person, and the team suffering as well, and it just becomes the norm. It's that that meme on Twitter of the dog and the with the fire around him.
Absolutely
total case. All right. So I know it's Mother's Day in the UK this weekend. So you have to go to take care of your wife. So I'm giving this one the timestamp on it. Tell her I said Happy Mother's Day, by the way. I want to get you out of here. So how can people find you on the internet? Where can they find Fanbase? Where can they find you? Plug away. Lots of plugs now.
Sure.
plug.
So you can find us at fanbaseclub.com. You can just Google Fanbase Sports. We should probably be coming up. And then we're on LinkedIn. We're on Twitter. Plenty of places to find us. And we'll be in... Well, this will probably go out after we've been in Chicago and NYC, but we're going to be in and around Chicago, NYC, Toronto, and London and Edinburgh all the time from the middle of the year. So in one of those cities.
Oh, that's great. Definitely check you out. Check them out. And so, Al, I want to thank you for doing this.
Yeah, it's been great. Love talking this.
Awesome.
Let me know what you thought about my conversation with Aleister Crowley by sending me an email. It is my name, Dave, at davewakeman.com. If you've made it this far and you aren't signed up for Talking Tickets, why not? It's talkingtickets.substack.com. It is my erratically released ticket-based newsletter. And we have talked about how sneaker kids symbolize the current state of the ticket market. I have talked about market research and brands. We've looked at things in the theater. Recently, I shared the four numbers I look at when I'm working on any ticket-based project, which is like peeking back behind the curtain of my consulting practice. We go all kinds of things, so you can get that at talkingtickets.substack.com. As I mentioned to you at the very start of the podcast, I want to make sure that I get your voice into the podcast even more than ever before. Much like the previous episode with Dr. Bijoy John about sleep, where I peppered you with for questions in the Talking Ticket Slack channel, all over the place. Tell me what you want. Tell me what you need to hear. Tell me where your struggles are. Tell me what your challenges are. And we can start by the conversation I'm going to have with Arena Metrics in a couple weeks, where we're going to talk about culture and bringing ideas across across markets and borders. We're going to talk about culture as like not just a cultural experience, but as an everyday experience as part of our lives, you know, and how that impacts the things we consume and the ways that we are as people, you know, and that could be business, pleasure, all kinds of things. So send me those questions at dave@davewakeman.com or thoughts and questions, whatever it is you might have. At the start, I mentioned that Dave is on tour. That's me. I am going on tour this year. I got a couple of dates planned. The first ones are the Fans for Life. Those are coming up on September 4th, 2024, a Wednesday in New York City, which coincides with Pearl Jam playing two nights at Madison Square Garden. Thank you, and you're welcome, of course, because I will be there. I'm also looking to take the Fans for Life back on tour to Australia, where the first one ever happened. That's Tuesday, the 19th of November, 2024. Again, coincides with Pearl Jam concert. Who would have guessed? Completely reinvented. After I did it in Australia and we had such a great time, we are going to talk about branding. We are going to talk about the customer relationship, the customer journey. I'm going to cover things like marketing research and how to even develop insights from data and research when you don't have a big budget or any budget at all. How to use free resources to gain an understanding of the market. We're going to hit that. We're going to talk about loyalty programs, whether or not they work. We'll probably hit on that. We are going to hit on the power of the position. We're going to talk about giving people what they want. We are going to talk about what a fan life cycle looks like. All of this and much, much more. It is going to be, if the first one was great, this is going to be greater. You're not going to want to miss it. It's going to be in Melbourne, Australia on 19th of November, 2024, in New York City on September 4th, 2024. I'm also going to be in London from June 28th to July 8th. Like I mentioned, partly goofing off, partly working. I'm going to go see Pearl Jam. I'm going to go try to go to Wimbledon because it's one of the things my wife's always wanted to do. I'm going to go see the National in Crystal Palace Park, I believe it's called. And one night, tentatively scheduled, let's call it tentatively, for Tuesday, the 2nd of July, we're going to do some pints. We're going to try to do some pints and get together with everybody. So, you know, send me a note. Let me know you're around. If you've got any ideas. I'm kind of planning out my schedule in London right now, so I can't tell you exactly what I'm doing because I have no clue. But I do look forward to seeing you in person in London, in New York, and in Melbourne. And I'm sure there's going to be more places coming up soon. And I will keep you in the loop. Thank you for making it this far. One of the things is like people are like, oh my God, I love it. But maybe sometimes I want to get it shorter and I'm going to work to do that. Maybe I'll break some of these up into two-parters or three-parters, whatever. But thank you for being here and listening this long. And since you have, I know that you love me and I love you too. And I love you back, to quote whoever said that first. But can you rate and review the podcast? Whichever podcast platform you use, it works. I use Apple Podcast. You might use something else on Spotify. This thing is everywhere. That helps me a lot. It helps me get better guests, helps people find the podcast. It helps just tremendously. But maybe even more, share this with someone that you know, that you work with, a colleague, a friend, somebody in a different venue, a different team, whatever, let them know. Gotta listen to The Business of Fun. Dave knows what he's talking about most of the time. I'm kidding. It's all the time. Come on. Who are we kidding? But nope, all kidding aside, share the podcast, rate it and review it. It helps. And always, thank you so much for being here. And I will talk to you soon.